Welcome to the UN Climate Conference, COP25, here in Madrid. I'm Karen Orantes from the UN Social Media Team, and I've got the great pleasure to be joined here today by our UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It is very good to have you here, and we have with us also a young climate activist from Madagascar, Marie-Christina Kolo. Welcome.
Thank you, and thanks for this opportunity.
Well, it's very good that we're here at the climate conference where the climate emergency is discussed so widely. We asked our followers back home to send us their questions. They're all very concerned about the climate emergency. They send a lot of questions, but I know you have a question for the Secretary General as well, so why don't you get us started?
Yeah, so I'm the first one to ask, what can you, the young people from developing countries like mine expect from the high-level negotiations that are happening here in Madrid? What can we expect?
Well, I think you need to expect that they are concluded with success. I think you need to be together with the youth movement everywhere, but also together with the civil society, even large chunks of the business community, putting pressure on governments to make sure that negotiations are not stalled, that they come to an agreement on the so-called carbon markets. But more important than that, that countries commit to do what needs to be done, and it is a lot, in order for us to be able to reach the end of the century without more than 1.5 degrees, which means to reach carbon neutrality, net emissions zero at the middle of the century.
So that's actually a good question. I wanted to go in that direction as well. We got a question from Callisto in Mozambique, who is wondering about the governments and the political will. He says, it's known that one of the major problems with discussing climate change is the lack of political will of certain countries. What can the UN do to help in that regard?
Putting pressure. And that's not only the UN, it's the UN, it's the general public, it's the civil society, it's even, as I said, the business community, to make governments understand that a climate emergency is already here. Some people think, and in some governments, because they are concerned with elections and with the local problems, they think, well, these climate problems are for the end of the century. No, the climate emergency is now. We see natural disasters that are devastating everywhere. And we see the glaciers melting, the corals bleaching, and biodiversity being under enormous stress. So governments need to act, and to act now. There is no time to lose, and everybody needs to tell their governments to act now and to vote accordingly.
Everybody needs to tell their governments, and this is where the youth comes in, right? Where do you see the role of youth?
Actually, the youth now, they have the creativity, the energy to share their ideas, and I must admit that sometimes we are not even considered. And that's why we are fighting strongly. We want our voice to be heard, and I hope that the UN can support us in that challenge.
No, we count on the youth. The voice of the youth is essential for us to be able to achieve what we want, is to make governments and other actors do what they have to do. Before our Climate Action Summit in New York, we had a youth summit. And the youth summit had an enormous influence in the climate summit. And sometimes politicians, leaders, they say, well, we need to communicate with the youth. The problem is not to communicate to the youth. The problem is to be able to listen to what young people are saying. Because young people are the ones that will face all the consequences of climate change in the most dramatic way. So they have a moral authority to tell my generation that we need to do the right thing. Because if we don't do the right thing, we are putting in danger the people and the planet when my children and my grandchildren will be adults and will be responsible for making things move forward. If we fail now, we'll be condemning them to a very dramatic situation.
Actually, I wanted to add something on it. We don't only want to be listened. We have solutions, and we want to be a part of all decisions making. For the moment, here at COP, I've seen many side events and events where they ask youth to come. They are happy to listen to us, but then during the negotiation, we are not the one who are, you know, who are really making the decisions. We are not even considered. So I hope that you'll strongly push for it.
Well, these are negotiations among member states. Governments lead the negotiations. But both the UN and the public in general are putting pressure in order to make sure that those that have the responsibility to find solutions understand that their divisions, their differences of opinion are very small compared with the challenge we face. And the challenge we face is the survival of the planet. We have been, in the last decades, at war with the planet. And the planet is fighting back. We need to end this war against nature, and this is much more important than any difference of opinion that might exist between this government or that government. They need to come together and to understand that the risks, the challenges that we face are much bigger than the small differences that divide those that are negotiating at the present moment.
Wid is actually joining our conversation through our Arabic channels, and he's saying developing countries are the ones that have contributed least to the problem, but they are the ones who are dealing with it now, first in front line. Coming from Madagascar, how do you feel about that?
Actually, I really feel connected to this question. Of course, my country is known as a country of biodiversity, but we have vulnerable communities too that are facing now drought, irregular drought, cyclones, also flood. And we feel like hopeless. We feel that we are not even heard in this kind of huge negotiation, high-level negotiation, where it seems that there is a division between the reality, what is happening on the ground, and what people are really negotiating for. So, yeah, that's what I feel from my small country that is most often forgotten and not visible when we talk about climate change.
But indeed, those countries that are suffering more the impacts of climate change are not those that are the big emitters. There are small island countries that have their own existence at risk. We have African countries in which the drought is not only making life impossible in some areas, but contributing to the insecurity and favoring conflict, namely between farmers and herders, or even supporting the environment in which terrorists can flourish, like in the Sahel. So it's generally small, poor countries that face the worst consequences of climate change. And then we have those countries that are the big emitters, developed and developing countries. There are also developing countries that are big emitters. And those are the ones that have the responsibility to solve the problem. But it's not only a matter of generosity or being worried about the poor countries. No. I mean, even those bigger countries are having dramatic impacts. Even the richest big countries are having dramatic impact. We see hurricanes, we see storms, we see devastation, we see problems of water scarcity, we see pollution, killing people in the cities. I mean, we absolutely need to convince those big emitters, those countries that have more influence in what's happening in relation to climate change, that it is in their interests, in the vital interests of their populations, to do what needs to be done. And what needs to be done is to now drastically reduce emissions in the next decade to reach carbon neutrality in 2050 for the planet to survive this huge challenge of climate change.
And in that regard, we just got another question about fossil fuels. The question that has been discussed here a lot, too, is what needs to be done to keep fossil fuels in the ground?
First of all, stop subsidizing fossil fuels. Subsidies to fossil fuels are paid with taxpayers' money. I am a taxpayer. I wouldn't like to see my money being used to boost hurricanes, to bleach corals, to melt glaciers, or to destroy the ice cap in the Arctic. I want my taxes to be paid to improve the life of humankind, to improve the living conditions in my country, and the same applies to all other countries. Stop subsidies to fossil fuels. Stop the construction of new coal-based power plants that produce electricity that is needed for our countries. It is with renewables that we need to look at the future. And at the same time, put a price on carbon. Tax carbon, not income. Tax pollution, not people. These are the kind of changes that are absolutely necessary if we want to keep a large chunk of the fossil fuels on the ground.
Krista sent us a question over Instagram, and she wants to know, what's the role of companies? How can companies help tackle the climate emergency?
Now, many companies are already leading. Many companies are becoming carbon neutral. Many companies are completely changing the way they produce or the way they sell or the way they research. And they are really understanding that the future of the economy is the green economy. Those that bet on the grey economy will be the losers of tomorrow. Those that bet on the green economy will be the flourishing companies of tomorrow, and this is being more and more understood. Unfortunately, We still have obsolete regulations that do not allow them to work as well as they would like. We still have a tax system that is not favorable to the green economy in many countries and in many aspects. We still have obstacles of different sorts, namely created by bureaucracy or corruption that makes their life difficult. But we need to support those that have already understood that the future is green.
We did get a question from Marie Christina in that respect. Luz from Latin America is asking, how can young people from different countries contribute to tackling the climate emergency?
Young people, they can be here during the negotiation. They can make their voice heard, of course, but they should act in parallel in their community. Start first with your community. Bring impact, sensitize around you, bring awareness in your school, in your university. This starts at the local level, but in parallel, we have to advocate with our local authorities, with our government, and at international level. And that's what I'm doing now. And I hope you allow me to add something to what you just said before about private sector and also this carbon market. We shouldn't forget to consider human rights in this question, in this issue, because so many human rights are now tackled because of this research for profit, only for profit, and developing country like mine, we are suffering from this.
Well, climate change is a major threat to human rights. First, to the right of life, which is the most basic of all human rights. We have the right to live, and climate change is killing people, and in big numbers. And then many other aspects related to human rights, both civil, political, economic, social rights, the right to health, for instance, are being severely undermined by climate change. And it is true that it is the lack of perspective in relation to the long term, the narrow-minded approach both to government action or to profits in the private sector that can lead to the fact that climate change is becoming one of the major threats to human rights in today's world.
One of the major threats, and I think people are starting to realize it. We got a question from India, actually. Prashant wants to know, not only young people, but everybody out there is concerned about this. Everybody has a role to play. He's asking, as a responsible person on Earth, what is my role? What can I personally contribute?
Well, I think he has a lot to do. India is an extremely important country from the point of view of climate change. And India people are suffering enormously with namely the combination of pollution and climate change. Lots of people dying because of that. Droughts in India are one of the most dramatic impacts of climate change. So in India, it's very important also to lead, to make sure that the Indian government does what needs to be done in order for India also to contribute to climate action. India still, for instance, has a huge chunk of its electricity production based on coal. And this is an area where you can put pressure on your government, put pressure on your local authorities, do everything possible to end this addiction to coal that we still have in so many parts of the world. And it is probably one of the biggest threats in relation to climate change. And there are many important campaigns in India. India has a vast solar program. It's important to support it. Campaigns in relation to sanitation campaigns. So there is a lot that can be done in India in the positive, supporting the things that are being done and that are good, and also complaining about some aspects that still need to be corrected.
So a lot of empowering messages. People can actually do something. Everybody can do something.
Everywhere.
We need everyone on board. Before we wrap up, I think you do have a final question for the Secretary General, don't you?
I have a final one. As a young woman activist, a young feminist, I must admit that I often face discrimination. And how can the UN support young feminists like me, tackling this discrimination, make our voice heard, and fight against and play a crucial role in climate action?
Well, unfortunately, women are disproportionately impacted negatively by climate change. And the central question is a question of power. We still live in a male-dominated world with a male-dominated culture, and we need to change it. And the way we are doing to change it in the UN is to reach parity. We have now, at the senior level of direction of the UN, half women, half men. And if power is well distributed, things will start to change. And then, of course, there is lots of things that we need to do for gender equality in the businesses, in the private sector, in the administrations, but also in protecting women against violence, namely in war and conflicts, in protecting women and children in relation to family violence. There are lots of things in avoiding forms of discrimination of different sorts. A solid campaign for gender equality must be central to any human rights policy in the world.
So a lot of work ahead. Maybe to finish up on a positive note, what gives you hope?
The young people give me hope, and I'm sure that when they will come to my age, they will do better than my generation.
Well, that's a positive note. Lots of hope. I know you have a lot of meetings ahead of you. Thank you very much for starting your day out with us here today. It's been a great pleasure talking to both of you. Good luck with the rest of the conference.
And it was a pleasure to be with all that are seeing or listening around the world.
And thanks for all your questions back home. And all the best from the UN Climate Conference here in Madrid. Thank you.